And
okay, money. The meeting is open. I think we have a long rest. I know other committees didn't rest, but it's almost more than 2 months that we haven't met.
Can I just ask a question? Does FAT know something that we do not know in terms of support for the Springboks?
they're playing within a month.
This country needs to be
defined.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they were welcomed at within a month. Okay, honourable members, today we've got only one thing on the agenda, and the report about 18 apologies. Oh, sorry, 13 apologies. I want to go through them with 20 minutes. We've got only one agenda on the item today. It's the briefing on the new submission for this year on the constitutional review. And without any waste of time, I'll hand over to our legal department, our legal advisors, to take us through the submission.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning to you and the honorable members and the committee's guests. I'm grateful for the opportunity to present our opinions on the submissions that were made to the committee, particularly by the members of the public. We have looked at 9 submissions that were received by the committee. We have made certain observations contained in our legal opinion. However, I would like to first focus members on the manner in which these opinions are prepared. There are 2 references, and I just want to clarify that so that there is no confusion. There is a committee reference. So I see the first opinion, we won't see a committee reference, but we should have a committee reference from 1 to 7, 2 to 9, sorry. Then we have our office reference numbers. So there are 2 references there. The one is for our office and the one is for the committee. For purposes of this exercise, we will make a reference to committee reference numbers because those are in a chronological order for purposes of today's meeting. Then, Honorable Chair, I have with me a team of legal advisors that have assisted the committee in preparing these legal opinions. On my immediate left, I have Ms. Suen Isaac. The back, I have Advocate Gordon. And we also have our capable legal assistant in Ms. Mungoma, seated on the far left side. Without further ado, I would like to hand over to the first legal advisor, Ms. Suen Isaac, to deal with the first legal opinion. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning to the Honorable Chairperson and Honorable members of the committee and members of the public. The first submission that I'm going to be dealing with is submission 1 from Mr. Sipo Colin Mambo. Just briefly, the facts of the submission are that Mr. Mambo alleges on the 27th of August 2010, he purchased a vehicle from a Mr. Naro Sumeru, and in terms of the agreement, the seller would provide the submitter with a car log book a week after the purchase of the car, and the seller failed to do this. The submitter reported the matter to the police but did not receive any assistance. He makes the following allegation. He says on one occasion he was stopped by police officers who demanded an amount of 1,000 rand from him so that he would not be arrested for driving without a valid license. He paid them an amount of 150 rand as this was all that he could afford. However, the police officers confiscated the submitter's car license and told him that he would only get it back if he paid them an amount of 500 rand. He states that the police are stealing from people and this needs to be stopped. The submitter states that he is unable to identify the officers who he alleges confiscated his license, and he currently doesn't have a car license and requests assistance to obtain one. After reading your opinion and our conclusion is that the submission contains no request for the committee to amend the constitution. The submission deals with civil matter. Currently, our law provides sufficient mechanisms for which the submitter can obtain the relief he is seeking. We would advise the submitter to seek the assistance of an attorney, and if he is unable to afford one, to contact either the Legal Aid South Africa or one of the campus law clinics. He also needs to report the incidents of alleged police corruption to the ICD. Our advice to the committee is that we advise that you write a letter to him informing him that the committee is unable to assist him as there is no request for a constitutional amendment and that he seeks the alternative remedies we suggested.
Honourable Chair, I don't know, I'll seek your guidance in terms of how we proceed. I don't know whether we'll deal with the one submission or do we just proceed to all the submissions that we've prepared. Thanks.
Honourable Mark, can you take all the submissions and then it's just cut them one by one?
Yes, person, you know, this one is should not even be in front of us. Can we just say agreed and let them... And then, just a request, I hope they're not going to leave all this stuff in the legal opinion. So, yeah.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I realize that whilst I've introduced my colleagues, I omitted to introduce myself. I'm Dutuzalo Banara. I'm the Senior Parliamentary Legal Advisor. I will deal with submission number two. Submission number two basically is from Mr. Mbaula, who is seeking the committee's assistance in terms of looking at the law regarding the initiation issues. Mr. Mbaula is of the view that the circumcision performed at hospitals cannot be equated to initiation. Our understanding of his submission is that he's suggesting that circumcision as prescribed in hospital should not be equated with one customarily practiced in African communities. It is Mr. Mbaula's submission that failure to distinguish between these two practices has the effect of undermining his traditions. Now, in brief, Chairperson, we realize that the particular law that is relevant in terms of the Constitution would be Section 9, which deals with the right to equality. And subsection 3 of that right prohibits unfair discrimination on, amongst other grounds, culture. Now, initiation and circumcision is one and the same thing, and they will form part of culture. The Children's Act deals specifically with the circumcision and how that should be practiced. There are two conclusions that we've come to. One is that it was never the intention of the drafters of our Constitution to differentiate in terms of which culture are, who practices a particular culture, and if the Constitution recognizes the equality of all cultural practices. And the provisions of the Children's Act, particularly Section 12, is very clear in that they, also in Section 12 there is no distinction. In other words, no cultural practice gets preference over another preference, which is consistent with Section 9 of the Constitution. And therefore, our view is that if the committee were to accede to the request of proposal 1, the relevant part of the Constitution that will have to be amended is Section 9, 3, with reference to culture in particular. How that could be done is to say, whilst culture is, you cannot discriminate based on culture, then you'll have to exclude circumcision there. However, we are of the opinion that such an amendment is unnecessary and undesirable. Thank you, Chair.
The members will just pass it and give the next one.
We'll then go to submission 3. I see Ms. Ngema is going to join us a little bit later. However, the submission submission 3, Chair. We have received a submission from Mr. Mukwena, which was on behalf of Mukwena Bamanzunyama, who submitted a request to have a new clause inserted within Section 25 to the effect that each government administration must have a window period to lodge land claims until everyone has been covered. Now, our understanding of the Mukwena Bamanzunyama submission is that they would like the committee to consider amending Section 25 of the Constitution in order to empower each administration in its 5-year term to give a window period for the lodgement of new restitution claims. Until, in Mr. Mukwena's words, everyone has been covered. Basically, Section 25 of the Constitution deals with two issues. Actually, our view is that the submission made by Mr. Mukwena requires a policy decision by the committee. However, our view is that such an amendment is undesirable for mainly two reasons. One, the closing date for lodgement of restitution was set not by the Constitution. Remember, the Constitution just set off the date from which land restitution claims would be recognized from. That is your June 1913. However, in terms of the process of handling those restitution claims, it is the Restitution of Land Rights Act that set the date. Now, if the issue speaks to the lodgement of restitution claims, we suggest that it would be appropriate to amend the Restitution Act and not the Constitution. And further, that Section 25(8) of the Constitution is sufficiently wide to accommodate further legislative and other measures aimed at achieving, amongst others, land reform. So we, in short, Honorable Chair, we in respect of this submission, we have the view that it is not desirable to effect an amendment to the Constitution. I then move to submission, submission 4. This submission relates to a request to amend Section 35N of the Constitution. Now, just a brief background, the submitter is currently incarcerated in Mangaung Prison, Correctional Center. His argument is basically that the way that the parole is currently being practiced is to his detriment. He believes that he is entitled or his parole conditions should be determined in terms of the 1956 Correctional Act guidelines. Now remember, the 1998 Correctional Services Act repealed in 2004, repealed the 1956 Act. And in terms of the Correctional Services Act of 1998, which in 2004 repealed the 1956 guidelines, in his condition, he would have to serve half of his sentence. Whereas in the previous legislative regime, he would have had to serve a third of his sentence to be eligible for consideration for parole. Now, the relevance of this background shapes or informs the basis of his submission to the committee. He relies on Section 35, correctly so, because Section 35(3)(n) says if an earlier law was less harsher than the subsequent law, and your matter was decided in that transition period from the much lenient piece of legislation to the harsher one, then you should be considered in terms of the lighter, the previous legislation. So in essence, what he's arguing for, he's not arguing for an amendment of 35(3)(n), because he uses 35(3)(n) in his argument to support a submission that he needs to be considered in terms of the earlier piece of legislation. Now, it is our respectful view that this particular submission does not seek a constitutional review of a provision of the Constitution, and we've made a suggestion or recommendation to the committee that because of the frustration that this particular inmate seems to be experiencing within the department regarding this matter, we are of the view that the committee could refer this particular matter to the parliamentary committees that have oversight over the Department of Correctional Services. I thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you. Honourable members, I'm just letting the legal advisors to go through all this, because as you are aware, most of them are not for constitutional review, so that we can discuss them in brief later and see where do we refer them to. And then we'll only be able to take a decision from the Formal Quorum. Unfortunately, you are already proceeding to Formal Quorum today. But they want us to go through these submissions as quick as possible, so that people are attending other committee meetings today and they can be released. Are we agreed? Okay, hello.
I'm dealing with submission 5 from House of Traditional Leaders. The submission contains some issues that overlap with other submissions that the committee received. So those issues have been consolidated in an opinion by Ms. Ngema. I'm just dealing with the issue of sexual orientation. The House of Traditional Leaders proposes that the Constitution be amended, specifically Section 9, be amended to remove sexual orientation from the Equality Clause. If we look at the Equality Clause, it sets down and it protects people against unfair discrimination by both the state and a citizen against unfair discrimination based on sexual orientation. Now, to understand the reason for this, you need to look at the historical context of South Africa and why equality is such an important right. Under apartheid, there was racial discrimination impacted greatly on both racial and minority communities, and homosexuals are one of the people who suffer great inequality, disadvantage, and vulnerability, and even stigmatization. As a result, the need to protect sexual orientation was incorporated into our equality clause, considering the historical reason for this. Section 9 places a duty on the state to promote and respect equality. Further, our jurisprudence regarding equality recognizes the inherent dignity of a person. So when the court determines whether there was unfair discrimination, it looks at whether a person's dignity has been infringed. And further, the founding values of our Constitution, which is something we look at when interpreting our laws, we ask that we respect human dignity, the achievement of equality, and the advances of human rights to all. So from the submission, if we look at our constitutional court dealing with the issue of sexual orientation, the court has recognized the impact of discrimination against gays and lesbians, and that they are a very vulnerable group and a political minority, and therefore they would rely on the Bill of Rights protection. Therefore, removing sexual orientation from the Equality Clause will have great impact. May have a great impact on people who are homosexual. Considering the way our courts have interpreted this may not be something desirable. Our courts have set a precedent protecting vulnerable groups, and it will be difficult for them to, or they may not interpret the removal of this in the light that the submitter wants it to be interpreted. So basically, if sexual orientation is removed from the Constitution, our courts will still have to be held by the precedents regarding protection of vulnerable groups and the right to dignity and equality. So removing it may not serve any purpose considering our existing jurisprudence. Whilst the decision to exclude sexual orientation from Section 9 of the Constitution is a policy matter which the committee must decide, we are of the opinion that the above amendment is not desirable as it will be inconsistent with existing constitutional jurisprudence.
Okay, thank you. Welcome, Honorable Ainsley and Honorable Okay, keep going. Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. We have Ms. Ngema with us. She's also a parliamentary legal advisor. She's going to take it through Submission 6 to summarize it for the committee. However, we've been experiencing a challenge with our photocopy machine. I believe she's been trying hard without success. We're exploring the possibility of getting copies to the members ASP. However, she's got a presentation and she will run through it. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, members. Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity and understanding that about my copies for the members. I'm dealing with submission committee reference number 6 of 2011. Chair, we found that most of the issues that have been placed on this submission were actually addressed or have already been raised with our previous submissions where we prepared two legal opinions from the Office of the Legal Services. And we've got copies as well of those previous opinions prepared. So the ones that I will take you through, Chairperson, is mostly some of those that have not been addressed previously. The first one was that it's a submission from the Mpumalanga Provincial House and also the National House of Traditional Leaders. They have been combined together. The first submission that they placed was that in the Section 212 and Section 211 of the Constitution should be amended to some extent. The first one is that they want the May that appears in Section 212 for the and the state legislation that must be made to set out the roles and functions of the traditional leaders. It must in fact not be made, because if it's made, it seems like it's made to be a discretionary point instead of an obligation that the parliament should actually make such legislation. But from our research, we found that because the parliament has already enacted the Traditional Leaders Framework Act, it's an act that in fact was envisaged in Section 212, and it does speak to all of the issues that they've raised, the roles, the functions, and the responsibilities of the traditional leaders. Then the second point, Chair, they also propose that in fact in terms of Section 211, the institution of traditional leaders should, as a matter of must, be recognized. But if we look at section 211, in fact, that's what the provision does. It recognizes the institution in terms of the constitution. And then they've also proposed that when dealing with local government structures or local governance in the local government sphere, the traditional leaders in traditional communities should in fact be given recognition and be given some roles, crucial roles that they should be playing. We found when looking at that, because there is either a proposal that there be some kind of a partnership with traditional councils where traditional communities are in existence. We found that when we look at Section 5 of the Traditional Leadership and Government Framework Act, it does speak to a broader scope of partnership or the use of traditional councils and traditional leaders where it's necessary, as well as section, in terms of the Municipal Structures Act, there's also a provision that allows for the partnership between local government structures and local government as such, together with the traditional councils. Going further, Chair, there is also a submission which suggests that, again, where traditional communities exist and there are traditional councils in place, the local municipalities should be established so that the traditional councils should be the ones that provide the services or do the functions that should be done by local municipalities. There's such a proposal. We looked at that chairperson, and we also found from the research that, in fact, most writers are suggesting that the involvement of traditional leaders in governance is actually something that can promote and give more strength to the governance structures where traditional communities exist. But they also suggest that if that has to happen, there must be a distinction between a traditional leadership role and the role that the traditional leader would play in terms of the political structures as well as the general government in traditional communities. And in the view we've taken in terms of that chairperson, we've said it's basically a position that the committee might have to look at, and maybe a policy decision be made as to whether traditional communities exist, there can be, instead of local municipalities, they can be traditional councils taking over and conducting the functions that should be. And then, Chairperson, the other point that we looked at from the submission is the point that they suggest that traditional councils should also work together with the Electoral Commission when dealing with elections in traditional communities. We also found that when looking at the constitution in terms of those provisions, Chairperson, it's in fact that the Electoral Commission is a Chapter 9 institution, and hence, if the traditional communities wish to, if the proposals could be taken further, that traditional communities, we are of the view that what appears in terms of the constitution is already covering the whole range of how that should go about. Chairperson, if I can end there.
The post submission, what I see, is going up to almost the triple X. Oh, there's that cover.
Chair, that's the aspect I just wanted to summarize. Basically, our view is that if the committee were to accept the traditional leaders play a much more bigger role, that could be clarified in the Traditional Leaders Framework Act, and not necessarily in the Constitution. And that with regard to the financial management of Parliament, that act is peculiar to Parliament, and therefore it will take a major restructuring of that particular act. However, we do not understand the reasoning that informs the submission, and therefore it's difficult for us to engage. However, if the committee would want to consider that, all that we can do is to point out at the complex process that will have to unfold. That's basically to summarize the three last bullets from the submission. With your permission, Honorable Chair, I would like to deal with committee reference number 7. Submission, Chair, dealt with two issues primarily. One is the proposed amendment of Section 25 of the Constitution, which is your property clause. However, this particular section, the submitter suggests a new Section 25 clause. I'm not going to repeat what his suggestions are. However, what is important is that it will seem that the fundamental difference between what is suggesting and what is already in the Constitution is a policy position. Really, it is not for us as legal advisors to enter into that particular arena. And we leave it to the committee, really, to make a decision as to whether or not the current land reform, as informed by the policies, needs to be changed or not. The second proposal related to Section 86 of the Constitution. Now, Section 86 deals with the election of the president. Currently, the National Assembly elects the president. What the submitter wants is that members of the public directly elect the president. Now, again, it is a policy choice that is available to the legislature to really consider. That's basically our view in respect of this submission 7. We'll then move to submission 8. Ms. Isaac will take the call through that.
Thank you. Welcome, Advocate Schmidt. Go ahead.
Submission 8 was received by Mr. Terry's office. Basically, he has three amendments to the Constitution. The first one deals with the rights of children set out in Section 28. He specifically requests that Section 28.1b be amended to read family care and parental care. Every child has a right to family care and parental care, and when separated from one or both parents, to maintain personal relations and direct contact with both parents on a regular basis, or to appropriate alternative care when removed from the family environment. Chair, our research and reading in the section, which is submitted as family care and parental care, does include what the submission seeks to do. Family care and parental care can be interpreted to include a contact with both parents on a regular basis. Further, we looked at the Child Care Act, which provides detailed rights and responsibilities for parents, and it includes the right for parents to have contact with their child. So existing legislation covers what the submission proposes. We are therefore of the view that both the Constitution can be interpreted and the Child Care Act have the existing provisions, and therefore if the committee wishes to allow the submission, it would be unnecessary because existing legislation and constitution cases for this. However, this is a policy decision that the committee can make. Further, the submission requests that section 1653, which deals with courts, be amended. Presently, it says no person or organ of state may interfere with the functioning of the court, and the submission proposes that this be added on unless interference is deemed necessary to uphold the functions of the court as described in the following section. Added to this, it asks that the section dealing with the public protection functions be amended. Presently, a public protector may not investigate a court decision. The submission requests that this be amended to state that the public protector may not investigate a court decision unless a preliminary investigation of complaints, gross irregularities, unreasonableness, and misconduct of judicial officers have occurred and in the public interest must be corrected and rectified. Chair, we also mentioned that this question deals with the issue of separation of powers. The reason why the Constitution protects judicial independence is to ensure that the court can exercise its decision freely and fairly and may not be interfered by any other party or organ of state. Further, the state must ensure or take positive steps to ensure the independence of the judiciary. Allowing the public protector to deal with matters of judicial misconduct may not be appropriate. Further, there's existing legislation that deals with allows complaints against judges, called the Judicial Service Committee Act, and there's a complaint mechanism within this to enable complaints against judges to be dealt with. There is precedent in other countries where public protectors are allowed to deal with issues of maladministration, but in terms of our current framework, we feel that this would be superfluous as the Judicial Service Commission serves a purpose. Further, with regard to the submission, the submitter's request that the public protector be able to rectify judicial decisions after a preliminary investigation finds gross irregularities, we submit that this will be a direct infringement into the independence of the judiciary and is undesirable. It is our view that while this is a policy decision for the committee to make, in our current constitutional framework, we submit that this is an undesirable amendment.
Submission number 9 by Advocate Gordon.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to the members. The submission that I will be addressing the committee on this morning relates to Committee Reference 9. It's a submission by Mr. Ngobese, and he raises certain issues, particularly in respect of the sections in the Bill of Rights that relate to criminals. He raises issues both in respect of juveniles and in respect of adult accused or arrested persons. Para 1 of my opinion, I set out a summary for the members which succinctly captures the view of the legal opinion. And reading that out, what it says is that there's a submission which concerns certain rights in the Bill of Rights, and the persons of the opinion that certain sections in the Bill of Rights are what he terms criminal-friendly. Whilst the submission appears to mention the word review, it does not actually refer to a review, but highlights certain circumstances and problems that impacts on the effect of certain rights relating to arrested and accused persons. Now, the reason for that paragraph, Chair, I thought was important considering the years and background to this particular committee, that this committee has over the years battled with the exact impetus and terms of reference to this committee, what is mentioned, or what do we understand to be the review or the amendment. I think members will recall the debates that this committee have had in that respect. So that paragraph is really to state that having looked at the submission, my view, Chair, is that there's a sense of unhappiness about the sections that Mr. Ngobese raises, but there's no actual review before this committee. Before I go into the extent of what he is actually saying, I should also highlight for members that the view or the conclusions that I reach for this committee, in my opinion, as a way forward, can be captured in paras 2.4, 3.4, 4.10, and 5.4. So any member wishing just to go to the synopsis of the view of the conclusions that I reach, those are the paragraphs, in my opinion, 2.5, 3.4, and 4.10, and 5.4. The first view that the that Mr. Ngubezi raises relates to Section 29 of the Constitution, which relates to children. Now, first, Section 28. Section 28 basically states that every child has the right, and then going to sub G, not to be detained except as a measure of last resort. Now, Mr. Ngubezi clearly states in his submission that this section creates the impression that crimes perpetrated by a minor or teenager is not a real crime. And he's saying because of the way this right is perceived to be applied out there in the real world. He's saying that there seems to be some sort of abuse, that minors, because they get through the criminal justice system easier than an adult, he wants this section to be done away with. Now, there's no review that he's raising, but when one reads his submission, the view is that he's unhappy about what's happening on ground level. He clearly says that there's an abuse, but what comes out of his opinion is that he says it creates the impression. So an impression by its very nature is subjective. It's not necessarily that is the impact of Section 29, but it is impression that there's some sort of abuse. So that's why I'm saying there's no review in his submission, particularly in respect of 29, that's before this committee. The second submission that he makes is in respect of Section 32 of the Constitution, and that particularly relates to the right to access. Section 32 starts with the word everyone, and then moves on in sub B, where the focal point of his submission, and it says that everyone has the right to access information held by another person that is required for the exercise or protection of any rights. He's stating he doesn't want this right to be applied to arrested or accused persons. He's stating that if an arrested or an accused person gets information, it gives them an unfair advantage over the police, and we shouldn't be extending this right to an arrested and accused person. Now, the follow-on section, in my opinion, I deal with Section 35, which he also raises, and without going into the depths of the law, which I quote there, Section 35 and any right extended to a criminal, we shall all be mindful, is based on the fundamental principle of a right to a fair trial, the right to remain to be innocent until proven guilty. So if we are not extending rights in the Constitution to an arrested or an accused person, we are then actually saying that you do not have a right to a fair trial. And for that basis, when you read the submission, you can see that there's an overall sense of unhappiness. There's nothing that this committee needs to look at to be changed or amended. He's saying that it's just wrong, and that by its very nature does not speak to the very backbone of our criminal justice system in South Africa. The last point that Mr. Ngubezi raises is in respect of Section 36 of the Constitution, and that by its very nature is delimitation clause. And we all know that rights within the Bill of Rights, as determined by Section 3, can be limited either within the specific right in the Bill of Rights in terms of Section 36 or where 7.3 says, as mentioned, otherwise in the Bill of Rights. But what Mr. Ngubezi says is he's saying that there should be this penal code that forces an arrest or accused person not to remain silent when they're arrested. And once again, Chair, we can just understand the ramifications of that. It speaks completely against our criminal justice system and the principle of a fair trial and the right to be innocent until proven guilty. So in that respect, there's actually no review or amendment in the submission 9 before this committee. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chair and honourable members, those were the submissions received and submitted to our office for consideration. And that is the work that we've done that is just presented to you. And I hand over to you, Chair, and await further direction.
Okay, thank you. Advocate Banana and Isaac Collins and again. Well, I remember these are the submissions for this year, 9 of them. As you are aware, actually most of them don't need a constitutional review. However, there are some that perhaps you might discount, like the President Leaders ones, since you are aware that there are a couple of submissions that are outstanding from the President Leaders, of which we are still awaiting the National Conference. because it's at the decision in which we took as a committee that we have to wait for the national conference thereafter, and directed by or performed by a state organizer that they make a submission after the national conference. So I think that submission from President Leaders, first President Leaders in Mpumalanga and National Republic, probably have to be treated the same as rooms of sporting. It would be much better to them all in. Okay, there are other eight submissions. Can we just quickly share your opinion, Honorable Kwan?
Now, as a general principle, I propose that we accept the opinions in relation to matters that do not need this committee's recommendation because they do not amount to constitutional review. As far as the other opinions where policy decisions as to be taken are concerned, obviously we can have a preliminary discussion at this point, but I think that it would also be appropriate to allow political parties to consider those, before we come back with formal party positions on those particular matters. So that's what I would think one could deal with it, except if there are specific questions at this point in time to the legal advisors pertaining to their opinions.
Okay, Honourable members, is there any other view? Or let me say, are there any points of clarity from members that would like to the legal advisors to clarify on? Advocate Schmidt.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, in a crucial moment I left. Does Mr. Is a previous speaker, sorry,
André
Gant. Does he... Yeah, man. does he propose that we go back to our caucus and come back next week on these issues? I'm not sure. I didn't hear the whole proposal.
Yeah. He's basically saying that because he says that we don't have much more time.
Fine, Mr. Chair.
Fine. Is there any other view from the members? Or any other thing?
Yeah, just two things. First, thanks to the legal desk of Parliament. I think they made lots of work and hours into these legal opinions, and for some times, it's not even necessary that we need to delve for some of them. So thank you very much for that. Secondly, it is difficult, I don't think I'll take this back to my party because, really it's the policy issues is now in on the desk of the ruling party. They must come forward with policy decisions. Then obviously it will become a debate and then we can take it back to the party. That's the way I understand these legal opinions. I don't think we can take any policy decisions at this level, coming back here reporting that our parties, that's the feeling of our parties. And I think some of the contentious issues of Section 25 is being dealt with in the new green paper that has, I don't know whether it's been published, but it is somewhere up in the air. But, really, if I understand the proposal and I taken that correctly, do they want us to report back next week what is our party's position on this? I don't think that can be the case.
Not necessarily next week, but you have our party position.
Obviously, parties will have to take these matters under review if some parties like COPE don't have a study group like the ANC, and I suppose the DA, then, it's not our problem.
That was a lighter note.
The question is whether those study groups are functional.
For sure. Okay, well, I remember, so that's any waste of time. Can we pass this issue? There's only one issue on the agenda, but can I sneak in another issue of another study tour? If you remember, we tried about it, and we said the secretary would look into it. But it was the last time we discussed, we were thinking of going to Kenya. At the time, it wasn't desirable because of the safety situation or political instability sort of in Kenya. So in your legal corner, so you're thinking, can you perhaps say, next time we meet, have a proposal where, which country can we visit that with the committee will actually gain in the senator. I'll leave that to you, members, to think about.
Well, it's just another matter that I also want to try and sneak in, and that is a matter that affects our committee. I just want to flag it. We don't have to discuss it now. So. The Honourable Ambrosini, who is not here today, wrote a letter to the Chair of Justice in which he deals with the whole matter of the constitutional mandate of this committee to review the constitution annually and what it means. I don't know, you know, maybe we can at least distribute that that letter, whatever we decide about it later. But the point is, that is a matter that I just want to flag as it does affect this committee. He basically states in that in terms of the Constitution, it is required for this committee and not the Justice Committee to deal with constitutional amendments. I just wanted to flag that for future discussion.
Yeah, if you are aware that since our strategic meeting here for our strategic plan, that was a year ago, he's been pushing for it. So we know he's passing well quickly. Okay, Honourable Members, in the absence of any other comments or proposals, can we adjourn until further notice? And thank you to our legal advisors and Honourable Members to take time that you come to this meeting. You know, Friday is a very difficult day for me to attend, but thank you for coming. The meeting is adjourned.